Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. Since 1852, thoroughbred horses have run races on the course that today is known as the New Orleans Fairgrounds. Lifelong New Orleanian Louis Broussard takes us back to the small plot of land that fed his family and many others when his father was a horse groomer there. Suzanne Nelson of North Carolina's Cozy Farms left a successful journalism career because of increasing concern over the lack of healthy and humanely raised food and her desire to change that. If you've never tasted roast veal, Suzanne is sure to make you hungry for some on this week's Louisiana Eats. I met Suzanne Nelson of Cozy Farms recently at Terra Vita, an annual food and wine event in North Carolina's Research Triangle. Luckily, I was able to capture the young farmer and her boundless energy for a Louisiana Eats conversation. Suzanne, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, let's start at the beginning. You didn't set out in life to be a farmer, did you?
No, and my dear mother is still asking what I'm going to do with my English degree. I spent the better part of a decade in Washington, D.C. as a reporter. I covered politics and money in politics and how Congress interacts with the executive branch. I never imagined that I would care so much about food. But it started with some things that happened in the health of my husband and my dog, actually, that I started learning about what was in kibble. And then when I learned what was in kibble, it wasn't a whole lot different from processed human foods. And so I started caring about food. And the more I cared about food, you know, my investigative reporter sense started really looking at food, and I didn't want to eat it anymore. I didn't even necessarily want to eat what was at the posh grocery store. I wanted to go out and eat things from people that were growing things in the dirt. And I set out, the farmer part of me set out because I wanted two things that I couldn't find. I wanted milk from my very own cow and eggs from chickens, and I wanted them to eat real food too. So that's where we started.
Let's go back to this whole feed thing, because when you started trying to find feed for your animals, that really was a kind of far out and super expensive thing that you were doing. Elaborate on that for me.
Pigs and chickens are omnivores, and in the absence of having enough food to scavenge, in nature they would find mice, they would find grubs, they would find other things of sources of protein. In addition to the pasture and things. In the absence of having a sufficient quantity of that, they need to eat some protein and energy that's supplemented. And so that, in the United States, comes in the form of grain. But I didn't want to feed them amalgamated, extruded, genetically modified, Roundup-ready soybeans and corn. That was not the point of me doing all this. At the end of the day, you can ask a chicken to go out on pasture, you can give her fresh grass every day, and 90% of what that hen puts in her mouth, nutritionally speaking, is what comes out of that feed trough. So what's in the feed matters a lot. Don't get me wrong, the pasture matters a lot too, but the feed matters. So I started going to our local co-op and buying wheat and buying corn, and I ground it in my home flour mill, and it didn't work very well. And then I met a guy named George Teague, I went up there one day to buy some minerals for my cow, and he said, well, that's silly. I have a mill. I could mill you some feed. So in the beginning, I would mix all the supplements, the herbs, the vitamins, the minerals, the probiotics. I would mix them in a little bin in my driveway in a Rubbermaid tote, and I'd hand mix them, and then I'd bring them up, and he mixed the grains, and we would bag it in his driveway, and feed would spill everywhere, and it was an ordeal. But now he's gotten some grants, and he has a large mill, and he's a regional organic feed supplier. And it's excellent feed, and when my daughter sticks her hand in that feed trough and tries some, it doesn't freak me out. It's real food.
Now, let's talk about the old Jerseys who no longer have a purpose at the dairy cheese farm where they've been living.
Well, we have a partnership with a wonderful cheesemakers, Portia McKnight and Flo Holly of Chapel Hill Creamery. We wanted cows, and they didn't have cows for sale. But I knew their older cows, who had some troubles. They weren't perfect anymore because, they were getting on in years. I knew that they were better for me to start with than some younger animals from less desirable stock. And so we've kind of adopted a bunch of their cows. I mean, these cows are 9, 10. I mean, that's old for a dairy cow. And in conventional U.S. agriculture, those dairy cows only last until they're 3, and then they're Hardee's hamburgers. So we have a bunch of them, and we're trying to get babies out of them. And the other thing that we're doing with Portia and Flo is we're buying their bull calves and grafting them, as it's known, on mamas. So Jerseys, so milk cows, have more milk than their baby can drink. It's one of the anomalies, if you will, about what we've kind of bred cows to be. One of the things that a pasture-based system allows you is a little bit more freedom to do some interesting, innovative things. And so I'm not the first to do this, but one of the things we're doing is raising rose veal out of those bull calves.
I don't know that our listeners are necessarily familiar with rose veal. Explain what that is.
So veal has gotten a deservedly bad reputation in the United States because the animals, when they were not hit over the head or drowned in the river, they were put in teeny crates. They were not allowed to turn around. They were never allowed to eat anything but milk replacer. So a cow's rumen, a bovine's rumen, needs fiber. They need forage in order to be normal. These little babies were given an all-liquid diet to keep their meat very, very pale. I mean, their meat looks like chicken. I mean, it's not beef in any real sense, but that was what was desired from a culinary point of view. Our bull calves, I think, have the best life of any animal on our farm. They are either born on our farm or born in Chapel Hill Creamery. They come, they get either their own mother's milk or an adopted mother's milk, and they drink all the milk they want to drink. They frolic with their mothers in the pasture. They eat all the hay they want to eat. They get moved to fresh grass twice a day. They're not castrated. They're not dehorned. They're not weaned. They have all the good things in life and none of the bad things of being a farm animal. And we harvest them about 7 months at about 550 pounds. So they're big boys by then. I mean, they're not babies. They have thick necks, and they look like young men. And they start acting like young men, too. And their meat is really unbelievable. It's extremely tender beef. It looks like beef. It doesn't look like veal. It's rose in hue. It hadn't had the time to develop into a true, true, really deep red. It's more of a rosy red. It's extremely forgiving to cook. You really can't make it tough. You can't overcook it. I mean, I don't recommend overcooking it, but it's just extremely forgiving. And it has a milk finish. You can taste the milk, and it makes the meat have kind of a creamy finish. And it's the best meat I've ever had.
Suzanne, what's it like to drink the milk straight from the cows?
It's like drinking ice cream. There's just a wholeness there. So there's a lot of things that the milk industry doesn't want you to know about milk. The first is that even if you go to the store and buy something labeled whole milk, it ain't whole. So the cream has been skimmed, and it's been sold for high-value items like butter and ice cream. And they don't have to put this on the label, but if you go way deep in U.S. code, you can find where this is permissible. They can add non-fat milk powder back to the milk. So the whole milk has had some cream removed, some cream added back, and the mouthfeel that you want from the cream, that's what gives it that thick, lovely, creamy taste, is non-fat milk powder from China in many cases with all sorts of other things in it, perhaps, that don't belong in it. So when you drink milk straight from the cow, it doesn't even taste the same. The way it feels in your mouth isn't the same. So that's what we feed to our own family.
So we've talked about the animals, and we've talked about how this all came to be. Part of the equation that you were working on that seems to be working out for you is how you actually sell your products from the farm. Let's talk about the relationship you have with that very, very special business in North Carolina.
So we're proud to be partners with the Saks Baja General Store. They buy a lot of our meat and eggs and put it on their menu, and we also retail a lot of meat through their case. So I buy feed from George Teague at Reedy Fork Farms. I feed it to my animals. One of the animals that we raise on that feed are broiler chickens, meat chickens. I turn and process those chickens and sell them to the Saks Baja General Store. They pay me. I turn around and pay George. And so all of a sudden we have community, and we have people who are able to create something that individually we wouldn't be able to create.
And they're cooking and serving some of that delicious food there, too.
Oh, well, and that's just tremendous. So the Saxpahaw General Store bills themselves as a 5-star gas station. It's a rather unique dining experience. I mean, what Jeff Barney has been able to do, not only with cooking his own food, but in training young people to also cook in these methods. And he uses very traditional methods. I mean, he, you know, in many ways, old school in a wonderful way. Braising, I mean, his braising is fairly much what he's known for. And I often say that the general store has made our farm possible, and people often think that I mean that they've bought our food, which of course they do in some quantity. But really the reason why it's possible is because they fed the farmer. I don't have much time in the kitchen anymore. I've been known many, many a days to eat 3 meals a day at the general store. So they truly feed me and nourish me, and that makes our farm possible.
Suzanne, I am so thrilled that you happened to marry a guy from Louisiana. So hopefully that will bring you back to visit with us again on Louisiana Eats.
Absolutely. I'd love to come back. Thanks for having me, Poppy.
Suzanne Nelson of North Carolina's Cozy Farm. When I was first learning my way around the kitchen, I couldn't wait to read the weekly Times-Picayune food section. My favorite was Miriam Guidreau's column, Pot-au-feu. Thanks to Miriam, a classic French dish called œufs à la béchamel was a meatless fast-day meal I sometimes prepared for my family. First, hard-boil 6 eggs. Cool and peel the eggs. Cut them in half lengthwise, and then again in thin diagonal strips. In a saucepan, combine 4 tablespoons of butter and 4 tablespoons of flour, whisking constantly until the raw flour scent is replaced with a nutty smell. Whisk in 1 cup of milk and continue whisking over a medium-high heat until the sauce thickens. You have now successfully made a classic bechamel sauce. Next, stir in 1/2 teaspoon of sugar and 4 thinly sliced green onions. Cook together for a couple of minutes, then stir in the sliced eggs and the fresh parsley. Season to taste with salt and pepper and serve over rice. With a crisp green salad, this is a simple dish sure to please the whole family. For a copy of this recipe and a treasure trove of others, visit our Louisiana Eats website at wwno.org. Now it's time for our Louisiana Eats Culinary Quiz Question of the Week, brought to you with support from French Market Coffee. The correct answer to last week's question, what classic Louisiana dish did Andrew Zimmerman and I cook up together at the Crescent City Farmers Market, is shrimp etouffee. Now let's see who this week's lucky winner is. Thomas Walsh, our Louisiana Eats producer, is manning the grinder.
Well, this week's contest winner was practically unrivaled in his scrupulous attention to detail. A heartfelt congratulations to our winner, Brian Brox of Metairie, Louisiana. And a thank you to everyone who participated in this week's quiz. I hope we'll see your name in our inbox this coming week.
Our lucky winner will be receiving 3 full-size bags of French Market coffee, including dark roast with chicory, and French roast. The Islaños people have lived in southern Louisiana since 1778. What island archipelago do they originate from? Send your answers to Louisiana Eats at wwno.org by midnight Sunday night. All correct answers received will be mixed together in our French Market coffee grinder, and 1 lucky winner will be chosen at random and announced on next week's show. Again, this week's question is, what island archipelago do the Islaños people originate from? Email those answers by midnight Sunday night to Louisiana Eats at WWNO with culinary quiz in the subject line, and you could be next week's lucky winner.
I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. If you are a regular Jazz Fest goer, you may have seen tall, lanky Louis Broussard whipping around the track on a golf cart, ensuring electricity is properly flowing to food booths and sound stages alike. A master electrician, Louis has worked the show since 1988, but was no newcomer to the New Orleans Fairgrounds. In fact, Lou just about grew up there. Lou, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What are your earliest fairground memories?
I can remember around 7 or 8. I was out there hanging with my dad, and my mom came to visit, and he put me on his pony and sent me around the backside of the barn, and I come running around the back with the pony, and my mom almost fell out.
Well, what was your dad's job there? What did he do?
He was a horse groom. He took care of racehorses for certain people, and his main job was to take care of the Fairground Corporation racehorses.
Your daddy had almost like a little mini farm out there, huh?
He did. He had melaton, he had eggplant, tomatoes. He didn't grow very much okra, but the snap beans, beautiful. My mother couldn't wait to get her hands on them.
There were some animals too, huh?
Yes. We had 2 goats, 1 cow, about 400 ducks, 300 chickens, and a cage full of pigeons.
You were eating the pigeons?
We were eating the babies. And my father would have me go into this loft and take them out of the nest just before they would come down on the ground and start eating.
Because they would be so tender and beautiful then?
Fat. Buttery fat.
So I guess you would pick vegetables, and every day there was a regular bounty that your mom was cooking?
Yes. I can remember going on my bicycle after school, going to the fairgrounds, and my dad had a big bag of whatever he would pick, and he'd tell me, when you go home, just make sure mom get it, you know. It worked out fine. We ate good. We had plenty of chickens to eat, plenty of ducks to eat.
So with all that delicious food that you were bringing home every day, what are some of the favorite things that your mom used to cook up for you?
When she wanted to stew a hen, my dad didn't want to give up none of the girls.
Oh.
He loved his girls.
And because they were egg producers, too.
Were they? Beautiful eggs.
So how did it go with the hen?
They would go round and round, but my mom always win. I wind up bringing the hen home sometime, too. You know,
and she would stew it up.
Oh yes. And you talk about fresh stew hen, brown gravy with green peas in it, all the other little specials she would put in it, and her wonderful potato salad. You couldn't beat it.
Oh, yum. What was special about her potato salad?
Mom just had the right technique.
Oh, it's all in the hands.
Flip of the wrist. Her spoon was broke into it, I guess. You know.
Did she preserve anything? Did she can or put anything up?
Not a thing.
No, she didn't have to because it was all so fresh right there available, huh?
Yes, yes. You very seldom found leftovers in our refrigerator.
Well, I loved the way you described to me that nowadays we would call this a CSA, community-supported agriculture. And your dad was kind of running a little CSA there because he was raising so much food, he was sharing it.
He was.
Tell us about that.
When it was time to harvest whatever vegetable or whatever he was growing, he would also prepare different bags for the people that worked in the general office of the fairgrounds. He would feed them also. And when we would harvest ducks, I would bring 12, 14 ducks already clean up at the general office for the people, so they can have ducks and also the chickens and also the baby pigeons.
And how long did this go on for?
Oh, up to maybe 12, 14 years my father did that. Yeah.
What are some other things that you remember about raising that food, working with your dad and hanging around the track?
Okay. That was a lot of memorable days for me. I wish I can go back to them, to tell you the truth. I had so much fun in that place. That was my playground. When the races would leave for the summer, the infield would grow wild and crazy. And before the turf track came, there was a ditch. I used to catch crawfish in the ditch right there.
Oh, gosh.
Right at the stretch before the infield. There's two ponds there. The back pond, I used to catch yellow-bellied catfish. I'd catch two fish, bring them to my dad. He would send me to Terranova's grocery to get a po' boy bread. Uh-huh. And that would be our lunch.
Well, that is so amazing, Lou, to think about the fairgrounds and what a self-sustaining place that was. People thought that all that delicious eating at the fairgrounds started with the festival. It's been going on, huh?
Yes. And we've had a lot of good times out there.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come and share these delicious, delicious memories of a childhood at the racetrack.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I know if my father was alive, he would too.
Louis Broussard, master electrician, sharing tales of his home away from home at the New Orleans Fairgrounds. They got red beans and rice, cornbread and mustard green. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Join us on Friday, March the 23rd, for a live taping of Louisiana Eats. Our special guests are Lynn Rosetta Casper of The Splendid Table and Road Foods' Jane and Michael Stern. Visit wwno.org for more information. Next time, we'll share a taste of Louisiana's most endangered dish, crawfish bisque. Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from French Market Coffee and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse, Palace Cafe and the Bourbon House, Lightseagan Funeral Homes, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Cooking Magazine. Theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, produced at Piety Street Recording. Thanks to Thomas Walsh, our associate producer and sound engineer. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.